Every lap in under a minute means every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
G'day everyone, I'm Will Dale and welcome to Repco Bathurst Daily, our special edition of the V8 Sleuth podcast coming to you from Mount Panorama all week throughout the 2022 Repco Bathurst 1000. Now this year marks the 100th anniversary of Repco. They're driven by passion and so are we. Visit the garage online now. The address is garage.repco.com.au. Now, alongside me here on this fine Friday evening at Mount Panorama is v8sleuth.com.au website editor Connor O'Brien. We had quite the afternoon at the track today, didn't we?
It was a lot of fun. Thanks, Will. Rain, drama, a few laughs. Bathurst is shaping up pretty well.
Yeah, the old Mount Panic and Drama really lived up to the name this afternoon. Of course, Supercars qualifying was on this afternoon at the track. I'll just quickly run through the top 10. Of course, Cameron Waters qualified on provisional pole for Tickford with a 2:23.61 second lap time, illustrating just how the conditions were out there with all the rain. That's some, 20 seconds off a really good dry weather time. Second place right behind him, Lee Holdsworth in the Grove Ford Mustang. That's quite the good result there for young Lee.
I'm surprised, Lee's had a really tough time of it, trying to get some qualifying pace out of that car all year. But maybe I shouldn't be surprised because Lee also has been dynamic at Bathurst for a number of years. 2020 was on provisional pole. Last year, of course, won the race with Chaz and, absolutely mastered the wet conditions there. That's a terrific job and hopefully he can, back it up in the shootout.
Of course, his 2021 co-winner, Chaz Mostert, was 0.007 of a second behind him in third place. Shane Van Gisbergen was provisionally fourth after qualifying, but was involved in an incident towards the end of the session, which we'll get to in a few moments. Fifth place, though, Richie Stanaway in the Erebus wildcard, the best qualified of all three Erebus entries, all of which made the top 10 shootout. That was a fantastic storyline to see how Richie went. Basically, as soon as the rain started falling, the 51 car came into the equation, and it's given everything Richie's been through these past 3 years, we know what level of talent he has. We saw what he did overseas. We saw what he did in a co-driver role at Tickford for a couple of years in 16 and 17. It was fantastic to see Richie just showcasing his talent once again.
Yeah, I can't speak highly enough of what a tremendous job that is by Richie, especially when you consider, so not only, been out of the seat for 3 years, but during practice had minimal laps, really. They had a number of issues, starter motor issue in practice one and another mechanical of sorts in practice three. So Richie really didn't get a lot of lap time before, or seat time rather, before qualifying. But he never looked like missing it, really. Once qualifying got underway, he was always just up there. And to be honest, really, really good job by Erebus in general, because to get three cars in the shootout, especially when one of them was in the fence at the end of practice four, not that long before qualifying, and when I went past there, it was all hands on deck. People were sprinting around. It was absolutely manic trying to get that car back out there. So to get that, especially to get that number nine car into the shootout as well, those guys must be pretty happy with themselves.
Oh, for sure. Just to quickly round out the top 10, seventh place, Nick Percat, both Walkinshaw Andretti United cars making the 10. James Courtney in eighth place, and then the two Erebus cars of Brody Kostecki in ninth, and Will Brown, as he said, was in the fence at the end of practice four, and that car made it, just squeaked into the last shootout position in 10th place. I'll quickly run through a couple of the big names that didn't make the cut. Anton Di Pasquale was the unlucky driver in 11th place, ahead of Andre Heimgartner, another renowned wet weather gun, who didn't quite make the cut for the 10. James Golding in 13th place, and I nearly said Brock Feeney in 14th, but it was not Brock Feeney that was at the wheel of the 88 car, was it, Connor?
Yeah, that was quite the talking point. The first, you know, I guess the first dramatic thing around Triple Eight for the day, which, yeah, it emerged during practice four that, oh, well, Wincup was looking, you know, pretty handy. And so it turned out that, yeah, Triple Eight decided to chuck Jamie in the car for qualifying. Of course, Jamie retired from a full-time or in a full-time capacity at the end of last year at Bathurst was his last event. And but the team kind of phrased it as that they were kind of protecting Brock, and you know, he's still learning and not putting him, I guess, not throwing him in the deep end too much. Do you think it was the right call?
You could look at it two ways. One, okay, yeah, it is protecting Brock on the basis that what Mark Dutton said to you before the session was basically, well, and then he said to the TV audience, basically, Brock did all right to begin with, and then he saw in practice four, then as the weather kind of got a bit more iffy and the track got a bit more sketchy, he kind of went a bit backwards, which, you know, young guy, not heaps of experience in comparison to someone like Jamie Wincup in these cars on this track in conditions like that, kind of to be expected. So they decided to put Jamie into the car to verify how it was going. Car turned out was going all right because Jamie put it second in the session. So from a competition standpoint, I can definitely see the logic in putting the faster driver into the car. But I don't think this is the right thing that Jamie Wincup team principal should be doing. You should be supporting the young driver and saying, no, this is your gig. Don't put trying to counsel him another way. Instead of saying, no, just sit this one out, young fella. Just saying, no, look, it's a long race. Do your best in qualifying. Make sure the car's straight at the end of it. Talk him through the various things he's learned about that place and what to do over the years instead of taking the seat himself. What do you think?
I think you've absolutely nailed it. Like you said, you can understand in the short term why they put Jamie in if he was quicker, but a phrase that got thrown around a fair bit, I think in the paddock and on social media, was a bit of like a vote of no confidence. What does that, you know, do to Brock? And, you know, he seemed pretty relaxed about it all, but
which was a good thing to see, because it would be easy for someone to feel maybe slightly undermined. But I guess with a culture within Triple Eight, like he does have their full confidence, just not in this specific situation.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I guess it probably makes it a bit better when it is, by the numbers, the greatest of all time, that you kind of, that probably softens the blow a little bit. But definitely an interesting one. And I mean, 14th, you can still win the race from there, absolutely. But yeah, definitely that was probably not one that I was expecting to see. But yeah, there was more controversies that turned out with Triple Eight.
Yeah, as I alluded to earlier, at the end of the qualifying session, Shane van Gisbergen, who ended up fourth on the timesheets, was going for a lap that he certainly hoped would give him provisional pole when he encountered Macaulay Jones over the top of the mountain, who also was on a qualifying lap and trying to improve. Unfortunately, they made contact at the right-hander just above the dipper, and the number 96 Holden went backwards into the barriers. Now, Shane went and faced the stewards, who investigated the incident after the session, and he was subsequently handed a three-place grid penalty that'll be applied after the top 10 shootout. So wherever he ends up in the 10, minus three places. He now, of course, cannot take pole position for the Bathurst 1000. What do you think about the whole penalty? Or should he even have been penalised?
Definitely a penalty. It's hard to say what kind of penalty is appropriate, or because, you know, if he starts the race fourth and Brad Jones Racing have to spend all night repairing the car, it's kind of a bit of an odd one. But I mean, the stewards, yeah, I don't, you know, they're in a tough spot there, what they can do. But you know, I can empathise with Shane. Well, I can't empathise, I haven't been in a race car, but I mean, but I can see why Shane would get impatient there. But the reality is, Macaulay wasn't getting shown blue flags. He was on a lap. Yeah, and I guess that was one where Shane just had to cop it. You know, yeah, that's not blocking. That's, you know, Macaulay has need to get out of his way, and you can't go too wide through there, and you can't put someone in the fence. So definitely a penalty. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it was interesting to hear Brad Jones's comments on Pit Lane Live on Fox Sports this evening, where he said, according to the stewards, Shane was apologetic for causing the incident. And you look back at it, it's easy to see when he's ranging up alongside McCauley to say, oh, this, to look from the outside and say, oh, that's a dumb thing to do. Why would you do that there? Why didn't you pull out of it? Well, at that point, again, I'm like you. I've never raced a car. I've certainly never raced a car at Mount Panorama, never mind a supercar. But at that point, we always hear it. The drivers are fully committed, never more committed than when on a qualifying lap. He can't just bail out of the move there. He can't, even up at Skyline, he can't really make the decision to bail out of the move there either, because there's a point where he's so heavily committed that if McCauley's slower than he expects, he's either got to make two options, either go for the gap or put your own car in the fence, because he's not going to be able to bail out of it.
Well, so I don't know. I think, you know, race situation, I think you can tuck in behind. I mean, again, not trying to Shane is the ultimate driver and I'm not, but but I feel like you can back out of that. It's definitely a tricky one, and it's a split second decision, and clearly like a bit of a misunderstanding between the two of them.
I will say, though, that if he was, on the basis of him being found, separate to what everything I just said, if he was found guilty of an offence there, which he was found, and found, just bringing up the stewards report now, he was found guilty of careless driving, which is, according to the rules, as I bring that up now, careless driving, the definition of that in the operations manual is departing from the standard of a competent driver, which is fantastic wording. But the next charge above that is reckless driving, which is any unintentional action by a driver which creates serious risk to others. That kind of sounds like what happened. I don't know.
Yeah. That-
Again, not a steward, not a driver, but it's interesting to always look at these things. But the penalty itself, 3 grid places over a 1,000-kilometre race, does that punishment fit the crime? I'm not convinced it does.
But I don't know if there is actually one that does.
That's fair. That's a very fair statement.
So, yeah, tough situation for everyone involved. I feel for McCauley and those guys, because they've been having a half-okay kind of lead-in. McCauley had a big moment in practice earlier today. But yeah, that's not something that any team needs unnecessarily. So, yeah, feel for those guys. But, yeah, anyway, I guess we all move on. And moving back to where you said earlier about the high-profile omissions from the shootout, I did want to mention David Reynolds was a surprise. And unlike Richie Stenway, Davey never really looked like making it during qualifying. He never really popped up all that highly, which is quite a surprise, because he is very, very good around here, and that car is usually very good in the wet, and Lee Holdsworth was flying. But yeah, those guys, down 18th.
Yeah, that was a surprise, especially, as you said, given that Reynolds is quicker, like 2015 pole sitter after a very wet shootout that year, does know his way around the place. You look at some of the other names, Craig Lowndes, who also was entrusted with the qualifying duties in the 888 wildcard entry over Declan Fraser, who ironically had just hopped out of his Super 2 car, having driven a race in even worse conditions.
Although not a lot of racing went on in that race,
no,
to be fair.
Valid point.
I guess it was the same situation that where 888 went experience over youth in this situation. And 16th, I think that wild card started 15th last year, so pretty similar kind of result there. And I think that's less of a disaster for that car to be 16th on the grid than maybe for a car 88 to be 14th on the grid.
True. We might just rattle off the rest of the grid. We got to 14th, where Brock Feeney and Jamie Wincupple start the race. 15th, Thomas Randall and Zach Best. 16th, as we said, Craig Lowndes and Declan Fraser. 17th, Jake Kostecki and Kurt Kostecki. Now, Kurt Kostecki leaves Mount Panorama slightly lighter in the wallet today. Unfortunately, he drove past Chas Mostert under red flags at the end of practice 4 when the red flags came out after Will Brown's accident, which you absolutely cannot do. So he was brought before the stewards, who found him guilty of that offence, and they fined him $10,000 with half of that suspended until the end of next year because of what they felt was the severity of the offence. After the Kostecki brothers, we have David Reynolds with his co-driver, Matt Campbell. 19th, Todd Hazelwood and Jaden Ojeda. This is another car that was repaired after a crash in Practice 4. Todd himself was also on the tools, helping to get that ready. 20th place, Scott Pine, Tyler Everingham. Just looking at this, Mark Winterbottom, the other Team 18 car, down in 23rd place. Neither of those cars have looked in the hunt at all this weekend.
Not at any
wet
point.
Or dry.
Not at any point. That's a surprise too when you look at Premier Racing, especially on Car 31 with James Golding. They've been very quick at times, so don't know what's going on there with Team 18, but definitely they will be scratching the heads.
21st place, Chris Pither, Cameron Hill in the second Premier entry, Macaulay Jones in 22nd place. That's where he'll start the race with Jordan Boys. The BJR crew is working very hard overnight, pulling all sorts of parts out of the transporter to try and get that car ready for the final practice sessions in the morning prior to the shootout. As we said before, Mark Winterbottom, 23rd place. Then 24th place, Bryce Fullwood and Dean Fiore. 25th place, Jack LeBrock and Aaron Seaton. Debutant Aaron Seaton making his first start in the Bathurst 1000 this weekend. 26th place, the Castrol Young Stars wildcard entry of Matt Charden and Jalen Rowbotham. They've had a solid and very quiet weekend, not really encountering any drama, which is good and probably what they wanted.
100%. For those guys, that's what they've got to do. And to be honest, if they can fly under the radar, that'll be a job well done. And if come Sunday, if they continue to do that, they'll probably find themselves in the top 15.
Yeah. 27th place, Jack Smith and Jackson Evans. And 28th and last, and this is a bit of a surprise, but Tim Slade and Tim Blanchard in the Blanchard Racing Team car. Now, Tim put the car into the barriers when the weather was probably at its worst in Practice 4 across the top of the hill. And it was repaired. They made it back out for the end of that session, but they were 7 seconds off the pace of Waters at the front of the pack, and something was clearly wrong there because Tim Slade's much faster than that.
Yep, haven't got quite to the bottom of what's gone on there, but clearly, like you say, that is not a representative time of what they can do for a car that has qualified on the front row here at Bathurst before and fourth for last year's great race. So, those guys have got obviously some work to do. So for the shootout tomorrow, what's your take? Who looks good? Who's going to surprise us?
Well, it is going to slightly depend on the conditions, which I hate saying because that is quite a cop-out. If it's raining...
Isn't it meant to be like 45 mils tomorrow?
Yeah, at some point tomorrow. There's all sorts of... The forecast keeps changing as to when and how that rain is going to be delivered. It's a lot of water. We'll see. Hopefully, it won't be in a way that prevents the shootout from happening or delays it or severely impacts it. But that's an issue for tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, I've just quickly brought up the forecast. 30 to 50 mil and very high chance of rain, most likely in the afternoon and evening, and the chance of a thunderstorm. So, I reckon it's, by the sounds of that, it's hard to imagine it's not going to be a wet shootout, which is probably great news for Richie Stanaway.
Oh, that'd be fantastic news for Richie Stanaway. Richie said he was actually disappointed that that it wasn't just all dry, so he could actually have time in the car. But he was also just quietly hoping he was going to get into the shootout. And the more time that he missed, he said, the more he was hoping for it to start raining. So, to be honest, I would love to see a Richie Stanaway pole position.
Oh, that would be, as a journo, you sometimes cheer for the story and... That would be the ultimate story. I wish those guys nothing but the best. So, hopefully those guys can be right up the front. But clearly a big ask when you're going head-to-head in a one-lap shootout against, Van Gisbergen, Mostert, Waters, Davison, and so on. James Courtney, I think, would be interesting too. He sometimes, tends to really shine, I reckon, in this type of format and... those Tickford cars are pretty quick around here, so yeah, I think it's a really good mix of cars in the top 10 for tomorrow.
It really is. The Tickford cars in particular, Cam Waters said if it had been wet throughout practice and they rolled out for the race with their dry setup car from the start of the weekend. They'd have been in, they'd have been up a certain creek without a paddle because that car just wasn't doing what he wanted it to do. And they made significant changes overnight, and now it's a rocket in dry and wet. So, yes, I would agree. He would have to be one of the key contenders tomorrow. Now, just to quickly run through the track schedule for Saturday, all the times I'm going to read out are in daylight savings time. So, 10:20 a.m. practice 5. That's a 1 hour session. Another 1 hour session at 1 p.m. practice 6, and then the part we're all waiting for at 5:05 p.m. the top 10 shootout. So, thank you for joining me this evening, Connor.
Thanks for having me.
The entire V8 Sleuth team, including, of course, myself and Connor, are on the ground at Mount Panorama this weekend, so keep an eye on the website, v8sleuth.com.au, for all the latest news. And we'll chat to you tomorrow with a wrap of all the action from Top 10 Shootout Day at the 2022 Bathurst 1000 on Repco Bathurst Daily.
Every lap in under a minute means every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.